When we think about Zen, we think about ancient masters, giants, Buddha, Bodhidharma, Dogen, who through great effort and consideration discovered a great truth, a great enlightenment. That sounds hard. Then we hear from Suzuki Roshi. Then we hear from Suzuki Roshi, who gives us a little bit more hope. It's nothing special, he says. Maybe I have a chance, we think. Well, then he says, it's kind of special, he says, just a little. You have to sit in a special way. It's called zazen. Many years ago, a good friend by the name of Jean-Yves Leclerc, some of you may know him, he is a student of Les's, in fact, one of his first students, and he was having a special ceremony called the Shuso ceremony, which is kind of a QA. And a young lady, perhaps about 8 at the time, her name was Riley, sat in the hall, and you had to come up with a question. Everybody asks a question. And she came up with a simple, natural question. In that big old hall, you know, he's sitting on the pillow, and everybody's sitting around. And she looks at him and says, "What's so big about Zen?" Johnny looked at her. This was kind of like his final exam, you know, for showing his Zen understanding. And he looks at her, he says, "Zen is very small." And, you know, that resonated with me somehow, the smallness of Zen. So I was just starting to practice Zen at that time, and I began to notice the little things around the Zendo. You know, how the cups are held, how people interact with each other, the cracks in the wall. All the little things that make up Zen practice. And, you know, came to see, we're not sure, that as you begin to sit, and some people have experienced over the course of the summer, it doesn't really seem that anything is going on, but somehow things begin to look a little different when you start sitting. We're not sure how or why, but the trees seem a little greener. We might be a little slower to anger. When someone cuts us off in traffic. Not always, but sometimes. We might have an extra minute for the child, the spouse, or the friend, or coworker in our lives. We seem less efficient, but somehow more gets done. So I started thinking, maybe there is something to the sitting practice. Maybe this thing that they say of practice is enlightenment and enlightenment is the same as practice isn't just a sales job. I'm trying to attract people to practice, but maybe it represents some valid experience. But how? Zen is nothing in itself. If you had to say something, perhaps it is an ancient knife. A knife that helps us to cut through the thick delusion of assumptions in our lives to the vibrant, living, raw core. Maybe Buddha's like a math teacher. A good teacher doesn't just have you do rote problems or recite them, but teaches you how to think. Once you understand the principles, you don't need the textbook. Bodhidharma, on arriving to China after the passing of his teacher Prajnatara, met the Emperor Wu in the province of Liang. And Emperor Wu said to him, "Look at all the monasteries I have built for Buddhism. What is my merit?" Bodhidharma looked at him. He said, "No merit whatsoever." "Then who are you talking to me?" He said, "I don't know." Bodhidharma then headed north to the Shaolin Temple and meditated for 9 years. He was someone already of great realization and a teacher himself in India, and yet he still meditated for 9 years. When we apply a static flow to our lives, a list of things to do, that kind of view of static view to Buddhist practice, it doesn't make any sense. It's silly. Zazen, though we are sitting very still with our bodies, is yet a dynamic experience. Perhaps it's like being on vacation. We have to open to the experience of life in Italy, France, what have you. We realize that we have the power to put things on a list, to take them off, or throw away the list. It is a creative process. Dogen said in Bendowa, which is a traditional book that's kind of an FAQ of Zazen, he says, Zazen is like Jijuyu Zamai. And what that means is, Ji is the self, Ju is to receive, Yu is to use, and Zamai is samadhi. So this translated, there's many different translations, but translated directly in a kind of a simple way, just translating each of the words, it's the self receiving and using samadhi. So if we really look at the small experience of Zen, we might notice that in each moment, in each breath, even within each breath, we let go and we receive ourselves. And it's not always quite the same self. We hand off from each moment to moment, to ourselves, the self that describes, represents, or appraises something is always a static self. The self that lives, experiences, is fluid. We're constantly in both worlds, doing both. In a way, perhaps one might say the second one is sort of the real self, the one that's experiencing. But to identify with this one, always in its fluidity and somewhat unpredictableness, can be a little scary. It can be a bit of a crazy dude. At the beginning of Zazen, we enter the Zendo and lay our conventional self down. The one who executes, takes emails, answers cell phones, does the shopping, goes to work. At the end of the Zazen, we pick it up again. But is it really the same? It never seems to be quite the same. Have you noticed? Somehow it's the same, but then somehow something has shifted. It seems like this process is always happening all around us, but we maybe don't notice it. Sometimes we see it in young children when they're growing so quickly that we leave in the morning to go to work and we come home again and they seem to have changed. In each moment, we have the choice of leaning back, looking to the past, standing upright, or leaning in towards the future. And there is that feeling, especially initially, that you're falling, dropping down, dropping in when you really begin to sit. But really, when you are falling, it is usually best to be upright. So posture is important, otherwise you might get hurt. Keeping yourself and your body balanced in an upright posture is your best bet. But you have to have some faith, too, that you will be okay. Actually, you won't. You will crash on the rocks below. But that's okay. because you will be created anew. A little softer, perhaps, a little more willing to listen, taking yourself a little less seriously, maybe a little more seriously too. So Zaza isn't about realizing something. That's impossible. It's about becoming something, or perhaps participating in the becoming, or perhaps realizing that you are participating in the becoming. So when on Wednesday nights we chant, as we just did, form is emptiness, emptiness is form, we can also say that form becomes emptiness, and emptiness becomes form. The old self is continually dissolving into emptiness. Emptiness is continually forming into self. Self is receiving and using samadhi. When I was a little kid at grandma's house, I used to listen to an old clock. Tick-tock, tick-tock. We were supposed to be taking a nap. But how could anyone sleep with this tick-tock, tick-tock? I would imagine how many seconds would go by in an hour. I couldn't quite calculate that far. Or in a lifetime. And still the clock would be ticking. Tick-tock, tick-tock. Oh, it was already different now. Tick-tock, and again. Tick-tock, and again. Sometimes you can see emptiness in the midst of opposites. If you're caught in a strong emotion, anger, switching around sometimes to self-blame. You don't know if to blame yourself for something bad that happened or to blame the other person. Sometimes you can look and see what's in the middle between those two strong emotions. And you might be able to find a small plateau, an area of acceptance, awareness. You can drop down into that, allow it to widen and encompass all of the universe. And then there's no anger or self-blame. There's only the rustling of the wind or soft words. Shh. The next moment has arrived. Thank you. Any questions?
Thank you for your talk. I really enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. I was reading the other day that human lifespans are growing longer, and that where our ancestors would live until their 60s, or maybe even only their 40s, people now regularly live until their 80s. And some people who are alive today may live to be 120 years old. And I'm struck by how our lives lengthen, but we somehow become more possessive of them. And how, even though we know that the rocks at the bottom are unavoidable, somehow we seem to be trying harder and harder to avoid them. I compare the experience of people who are doing everything they can to live longer to someone who knows they're going to die of cancer soon. And how they're able to prepare for death better knowing that it's happening soon. And I'm wondering what you make of that and what you think will happen as our lives get longer.
You know, I was just traveling last week to New York, and as it happened, the person next to me in the plane, I often talk to people next to me, and it ends up being interesting. And it was a very friendly woman, and I started talking with her, and we shared a cab going to visit my daughter. And her name was Donna McKechnie. And it turns out, I didn't know it at the time, but we were talking about dancing. She's a dancer, and she had just done a performance at the Herb Theater in San Francisco. And she was telling me about how you have to continually renegotiate yourself. That's the term she used. And I was thinking, man, this is just what Dogen was talking about. Renegotiate yourself, that sounds great. And she's 72 and still dancing. And she was a great, great model for kind of attitude that you know, you're talking about. It turns out she is a winner of some Tony Awards for Chorus Line and so forth. I mean, she's really quite famous. But I think this is what has allowed her to stay in her game, because she says she's not as fit as she used to be. She can't do a lot of the things that she used to do when she was younger. But she's in the dance studio every day, renegotiating.
Thank you for your talk. You said something was scary, and I didn't catch it.
Something was scary? Letting go.
Oh, okay. I agree with you. Thank you.
It's being one with your own experience. It's actually not having a separation of object and subject. So it's not, you know, sort of somewhere in some book or something. It's in here. Really being able to stay with that experience. You know, I think we all experience it for teeny, teeny portions. And that's kind of what brings us here. We want more of it. We might experience it when we're on a vacation and we're like looking at some beautiful scenery or some perfect moment and you're like, man, this is it. But then we lose it in the, buried in, you know, in under our desk somewhere. And we don't know how to get it in all circumstances. We don't know how to connect with ourselves on that level in all circumstances. And I think being able to do it unequivocally, you know, consistently, is what we call samadhi. Your true self.
Value the life, and we're just brooding over things, just wasting the time we have in life and, you know, thinking all sorts of things and not living a life.
Right.
So this person I'm just like watching every time wants to do everything in whatever business it's like. Wanted always to learn certain type of dance and more. There is breathlessness, but still wants to do it because there's very little time.
Right.
So it's amazing to see.
Right.
There's two.
Yeah.
There was another same situation with the dad, knowing that colon cancer and going to pass away. His wife is my neighbor, and she told me amazing stuff he did because he knew he was going to die.
Right.
Things that she took care of, and things that the family did because he had a limited time with him.
Sure.
So, I mean, it's just, it's active, basically.
Yeah.
We take life for granted, I think.
Right. Right.
Live in the moment.
Yeah.
That's what I learned from this.
Yeah, it's a wonderful lesson, really. A lot of people report that when they get a terminal illness, it forces them to kind of wake up to the reality of their lives. It sharpens that knife. We all have a terminal disease, really. But we don't think about it most of the time. Yeah. Thank you. Bonnie.
So what if it goes the other way? I mean, sometimes people get really clear and inspired, like, I'm going to die, let me really do what I want and love and show the people I care about, spend time, you know, with the priorities clear. But it could also go the other way, right? They could also say, well, I've been good all this time and I just don't care anymore, and engage in self-destructive behaviors and I guess kind of go into depression or fall apart. And I guess if you're in a situation where you're dealing with some kind of grief, how do you stay inspired? Or if you know someone in that situation, how do you stay inspired yourself so that you can inspire them?
I find that sitting is really good for that. Actually, I mean, because I, you know, when I'm taking care of somebody who's ill or in a situation where there's a lot of suffering, I think sitting is one of the best ways of grounding yourself, you know, in terms of emotional waves or suffering. There's very little, when you're grounded like this, it's very hard to get all upset. Occasionally it happens, but it kind of just dissipates. You're just grounded, and then as soon as you get up, it kind of starts again, you know. But remember that feeling of groundedness. That's good. Jayshree.
The comments have made me think about this, or I'm recalling some of the readings, and I think, like you said, we don't have to have a diagnosis of being terminal. The minute we're born, the reality is we're going to die. Mm-hmm. And I think we go through life in a sort of a denial that we're going to die. And so we wait for developments to occur that will, you know, give us more life. And what you said about sitting, I mean, that's the whole point about zazen, is to accept that every moment we're actually dying. And if you can accept that, if you can accept that every moment we are dying, and that it's inevitable, that you're going to die, and there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, life and death is all beautiful. And if you can come to an understanding of that, then, you know, that's the whole point of the practice. I mean, that's what all the readings have told us, is that those two things go hand in hand. But I think what we do is we try to deny that. And so somebody who's terminal has been told that. But actually we all are. We all are going to whether it be, you know, 10 years, 20 years, 50 years, but we're all going to be there one day. And if we can come to terms with that as we sit every moment, then we are all ahead.
Doesn't seem like
I kind of wanted to respond to Scott too about that. So,
thank you. fertility.
So you mentioned crashing on the rocks. Then what happens?
I don't know. You tell me.
Comment that I like so many of your metaphors that you're using, and I even feel like reaching for many different metaphors is good because it emphasizes what I was picking up when you were saying about constant change and the wisdom of staying with that change, and you're talking about the dynamic between static and fluid. And it's kind of, to use a very modern word, it's like an attenuation to feel how to stay with that constant releasing. I like that you had so many rich metaphors, how you release yourself and then immediately catch yourself again. And that's a small thing, I think you were, at least that I took away, that you were talking about, how it can be so small. But then when we talk about death and our life, it's one very big catch and release. And everything in between, I think. And the question I had, I was thinking about asking was, it's all very well and good to sit and be peaceful in the Zendo once a day or once a week. But how can it make any difference when you're out in the rush of events like you always have to face? And I think what you said again, that it's maybe something has changed, and that's that stretch of the release, being able to catch yourself again in one sense.
Mm-hmm. So you're less afraid. You're less afraid of letting go and catching. Because that was always a little bit, you know, we're always afraid a little bit just to let go, because we are dying when we do that. And so it's a little bit. Yeah. Umar.
So yesterday what happened, this woman came into Best Buy and I'm helping her. And this other woman comes around, and I'm thinking she's with her. And she was young, and it's like my radar doesn't go that way. So, but she came and stood right in front of me and said, can you help me? And I said, well, I was like, okay, let me call for help. And while I was calling for help, the first woman who I was helping, she just got angry at me. And she used the F-bomb on me, and she used other stuff on me. But, you know, the interesting thing was that I've started practicing something recently, and this comes out of sitting, that it was forgiveness and acceptance. I said to myself, I forgive this person, and I accept them for who they are. And it was just this emotional release, was just like somebody took the weight and went, it was gone, and it's like all of it was gone, and it was just absolute and pure, you know, release. It was just like freedom, without holding on to anything. It was just like that. And recently, I was reading about, you know, what Sharma was talking, what she was asking about samadhi. Or the interesting thing that I read was confidence. Input in simple terms, it comes down to taking out the resistance. Just take out the resistance and that's confident. And this is what Zen practice is all about. It's about this direct experience that we have with life. That you have a direct experience with life. I don't know, I think it was Rocky V, where he's standing there talking to his kid, and the kid says, well, you know, you, who do you think you are? You're going to go into the ring and you're going to make a fool out of yourself, and you're a stupid person. And Dad turns around and says, you know, I brought you up. You were this small. I brought you up, and you were this kid that was, you know, I used to look at you and say, you're going to grow up and be this great kid. And you turned out to be a great kid. But somewhere along the line, you forgot that who you were. And you started blaming other people and saying, oh, this person telling me this, and that person telling me that, that person telling me that, that person telling me that. And you forgot to believe in yourself. He said, life is not roses and fruit and whatever he says, but he says the most important line that he delivered in that is, life is not about how hard you can hit. It's about how many hits you can take and keep moving forward. And this is, we all know that we're going to die. And I think instead of being sad about it, we should be happy about it. Because that gives you a timeline, that gives you the confidence, that takes out the resistance and says, yes, you are going to die. And you are sitting here and you are looking at yourself and saying to yourself, I accept, I forgive everyone, forgive myself, and I take out the resistance and I know I'm going to die. Just like in meditation, you know, you are sitting there, or I'm sitting there, and anybody else is sitting there, and we're taking hits from all the people who've come into our lives and all the mental thoughts that show up and say, you can't do this. And you say, no, watch me. And you go forward, you know. And this is the heart of practice. This is what it does to you. It makes you confident in the way that you have to go and have the direct experience. It cuts through everything. All the stuff that people have given you and thrown at you, it cuts through all that stuff and says, no, you know what? I may have fallen down 10 times, I'm going to get up again. I'm going to get up again 11 times, 12 times. I'm going to keep on getting up. You know? And this is the real essence that it comes out to me. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Sounds like the same, Molly.
Yeah. I think, is it more? Okay.
So I have actually been thinking a lot about this. I don't think most of the people, they really are afraid of dying. Most of the people are really afraid of suffering. Mm-hmm. See, I know I won't be there like whatever year, 2200 and whatever, right? It's no big deal. It's the thing is, like, people, if given a choice, they would rather, you know, choose to have, you know, in their sleep, you know, in their old age, whatever, like that, you know, it's, rather than dying in some miserable car crash or something. That is, so I wonder if you have any thoughts about it, you know, like about that suffering, what Omar was talking about, you know, basically like that, he's saying that weight drop,
right.
Just let it go. That is really not about dying, the physical dying, as far as I can think of. It's really about the,
right.
The
right.
Suffering.
Suffering, yeah, that's what, well, Buddha keeps talking about that, you know. He has a course in that, how to take care of that. In fact, it's taught every other Wednesday, second Wednesday of every month, the Eightfold Path. Yeah, so I think suffering is a problem. You know, we are a little bit afraid of it. And, you know, there's this mindfulness, you know, it kind of comes down to mindfulness, and some people can't physically sit who are very ill. But there's this course called Mindfulness-Based Stress Reduction that's taught by John Kabat-Zinn, and it's taught to people with cancer and other, you know, diseases who may not have ever practiced in their lives, and they kind of have this opportunity through kind of this course. It's an 8-week course to really experience a little bit mindfulness. And there's many testimonials that people have felt that it really has helped them in their suffering, that they're able to center themselves. And kind of a lot of suffering is, there's the physical pain, but if you actually are very mindful, the pain comes and goes. It might come in waves. And then there's also the suffering that says, oh yes, it hurts, but what does it mean that it hurts? Is my disease getting worse, and so forth? And so there's this whole secondary kind of thing that we bring to it, and I think through mindfulness you can reduce that. And, you know, there's also medications. Thank you, everybody. Is there anybody here for the first time? Yes, can you tell us your name, please?
I'm Hami.
Hami? Nice to meet you, Hami.
My name is Roy.
Roy? Nice to meet you. Anybody else? Oh, yes.
Faride.
Nice to meet you today. Can the rest of us introduce ourselves?
Richard.
Megan.
Sylvia.
Kaiser.
Ross.
Ken.
Connor.
Lee.
Richard.
Chris.
Bonnie.
Scott.
Jayshree.
Carolina.
Leah.
Balaji.
Garrett.
Declan.
Sylvia.
Pam,
Vanessa,
Alex,
Omar, and Brenda. Thank you, everybody. We're going to have cookies and tea in the back room, and we can continue the conversation in the back house. Thank you.
Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless.